I was a soldier, then a veteran, a husband, and a father. And with my VA home loan, I'm a homeowner. No down payment required and no PMI. Build your future with the VA home loan. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Hello everyone, Andy here, and here's what you can look forward to in today's episode.
In today's episode, I was joined by Jarlath Eaton as we review week 11 in the 2025 NFL season. Jarlath gives his take as his Commanders lost to my Dolphins in Madrid.
And unfortunately, you miss one kick, it happens. If you miss two, you gotta go.
And I look at one team who may feel this season was a missed opportunity as we review the rest of week 11. Hope you all enjoy.
This could be no year to do it because...
Hello everyone and welcome back to the Across the Pod NFL podcast. I am, as ever, your host today, Andy Davis, and we are here to review week 11 of the 2025 NFL season. And as you can see, for those who are watching on YouTube, you can see my guest today back on the show, part of the T20 Blast podcast, also a Commanders fan, back with us today is Jarlath Eaton. Jarlath, first of all, how are you? How are things?
It's good to be back with you, Andy. Thank you very much for the invite. Although I don't know if you'd invited me had the result gone a bit differently at the weekend. No, it's a genuine pleasure to be back on. I wish it were in happier circumstances because the last time that we spoke, the Commanders were heading into the playoffs. Everything looked rosy. And now in week 11, it's back to normal. The season's completely finished, but it's all good. How was your trip over to Madrid as well? You managed to see your Dolphins win for the first time ever. In person.
Yeah. I would love to be, if I drank, I'd love to bring in a champagne bottle and celebrate it. It really was, like, for me, the stars aligned for me personally. You know, for those who don't know the story, this was my 8th Dolphins game and my first win I'd seen as ever have. And for that context as well, it was a 16-13 win in overtime for the Dolphins. Yeah, for me, all the stars aligned because it was, first of all, I was working at the event. I got to go to the practice session of my own team, watch the game in the press box, and do it at an iconic venue like the Bernabeu. What a place to get your first win. Because there was a point last year I was watching us play the Jets in week 18, and I was thinking, it's going to be typical. We're going to finally win in person for me, and we're not going to beat the playoffs. It feel like a bit bittersweet. Whereas this time around, you know, the stars all seem to align. Really did for me, and then when there was points in the game where I'm thinking, right, if we can't beat a team with their star quarterback injured, their best two receivers injured, and their best defensive player out for punching a player, and we still don't win, I was thinking at one point, how are we gonna ever win a game in person? Because it just felt like this was the chance to finally see it happen, and I felt for a while during that game that we were actually gonna not win the game, and I was thinking, you know what? I'm never going to see it happen. But thankfully, it did happen. It was a win for the Dolphins. It's now 3 wins in the last 4 games. And the very thin playoff hopes hang by a very, very long thread. But I found Madrid overall good. I wish it was drier. Obviously, you got there on a Saturday, if I'm right. So,
I did.
Thursday and Friday weren't. The Thursday night was pretty bad. When I walked from the metro station to my Airbnb, it was very wet. I had one of those plastic bags from Bristol Airport, and within 10 minutes of me being in the rain, that bag was just falling by the pieces. And, and then Friday actually wasn't too bad. Friday was actually all right. When he went to the practice session with the Dolphins, it was pretty dry. Maybe there was some light showers or light sprinkles at some point, but it was pretty fine. But my word, Saturday. Jarl, I think you brought the weather with you because Saturday was horrendous. I mean, I was outside for a good amount of time watching the Dolphins fan event with Anton Griezmann was hosting it. And I walked around a bit. I was trying to find the store where they had a Ryan Tannehill meet and greet, but it was just too big a queue to be caught in that rain with no shelter. So I was out in I was in total outside in the rain for about 3 hours. I met up with the likes of Michael McQuaid and Will Gavin, likes of Will Barney as well, Tom Scholes from TalkSport. We met up on Saturday for food and drinks, and it was an hour later, I'd been in the dry, and it was still damp clothes. It was that wet. It was just horrendous. But thankfully, Sunday held up. So, yeah, it was a bit wetter than I thought Madrid would be. I thought it would be a bit more of a drier occasion. But, yeah, overall, great weekend, capped off with a win. But for you, Jarvis, of course, you had the other end of the spectrum. You went there and saw your team lose. But how was your Madrid experience from the staging review to Madrid on the Saturday, your flight in? How was that for you?
So we were on a later flight, my dad and I. I think I told the story last time I was here. My dad has became a Washington fan when they were the name that we shall not mention, because of John Riggins scoring that touchdown in the Super Bowl when they played against the Denver Broncos, and that was it. He was hooked, and I've been now a fan with him for 20 years. So we flew out of Stansted, the absolute worst. We flew out of there, had about an hour delay. We got into Madrid about 8 o'clock local time of the evening, so we didn't really have that much time to go out, do anything. Sunday, woke up, went to the game. We went to have a look at the Commanders rally, the pre-game rally, in an Irish bar in Madrid. And that was packed at 11:30, 4 hours before kickoff. I did find out Josh Harris brought around for everybody in the bar later on in the day, which I was fuming about. So very, very good stuff. Then went to see the Giant Heads at Plaza de Cibeles. Went into a nice restaurant after that and made our way to the stadium. I will say this, I understand it's your first time hosting the game, so I won't try and be too critical. However, I did think that trying to get into the ground for fans, it was an absolute shambles. You know, there was queues halfway around the blocks. There was only 4 entrance points because they had to have the enhanced metal detectors. There was only 4 ways you can actually get into the ground behind the security screening, which I think that needs to be improved massively, because there were a lot of fans that were still coming down the steps at 4 o'clock, which is half an hour after kickoff local time, and that just isn't good enough. If you're paying a lot of money, which a lot of people are, to go to these NFL games, the stadium experience to get in and out has to be improved. That's my main big takeaway from that. Having said that, though, to be able to tick off the Bernabeu is an absolute dream. Never done it. I'd always wanted to do it. And the way that they have renovated that stadium is just pure class. It is unbelievable. The big board, the 360-degree big board, the only one outside of North America, is absolutely outstanding. Thought the atmosphere slowly built as soon as people got into the game. And I did think that because the roof was closed, the PA was slightly too loud. But that's just me being an old man, I think, to be brutally honest. But that was there. Went home after the game, obviously. And then we went back to the hotel, and we basically went straight back to the airport on Monday morning. But I didn't get to see much of Madrid, so I'd like to actually see a lot more of it. But in terms of a weekend, I don't know how you felt being around the area, Andy, but I thought it was a weekend. There's so many teams, as there always is for a European NFL game, but there are so many people out there supporting the game. And it just goes to show you that the NFL is continuing on this ridiculous growth. And I think I don't know how to say this, because I understand, because talking to a lot of Americans in our hotel, I understand their frustration about losing a home game and having to play it abroad. I do understand that. But I hope that as more Americans do come, and they have come in their droves this year, actually, not just to Madrid, but to Frankfurt, to Berlin, Dublin. I mean, we were both there for Dublin. It was just unbelievable, the atmosphere, and obviously Wembley and Tottenham. I do think that as more Americans do come to these international games, they do see that there are a lot of fans of this sport, this great sport. And yes, it is frustrating for them to have to fly 4,000 miles to go and play. But for us European NFL fans, to be able to go and watch a load of games around near us, I think is just absolutely superb.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a stat about it, I felt it in London, more Americans than ever before. And, you know, being in Dublin on Saturday in Temple Bar.
Unbelievable.
I felt like I was in America. I did, because everyone in the pub was American. The only people that weren't American were me and Freddie from the Franchise Tag and the guy playing the guitar in there. Everyone else I heard around me were from Pittsburgh, were from Minnesota, were from America. So, yeah, I think, you know, there's that thing about, is there going to be a team in the UK? But I think this is the way it's going. And I feel like, you know, I think for Americans, it's like you can use it as a holiday. You know, a lot of times Americans, they'll go to a game, they'll leave on the Saturday night or the Sunday morning, and they'll go back on the same day. This could be a 3-hour flight, whereas as Brits, a lot of the time, you get a 3-hour flight to Greece from the UK and you're there for a week. Mm. So I think I think a lot of them were treating it as make a holiday out of it, give them a chance to explore Europe and or UK, wherever they are going to be. So yeah, I felt like what I've seen this year, and I think the last couple of years, more fans from those two teams playing. Obviously, like you said, every team is on display. I found less so in Madrid, but everywhere else, yes, you see it a lot. But I found there's been a lot more of a concentration. A bigger percentage of those fans in attendance are those teams involved. So for me, yeah, it was really good to see. And obviously, the games haven't been great this year, but I kind of feel like it's always a lottery. You could even have, you know, games in America that are always bad. You know, I think it's just, you know, you could have two bad teams make it a good game. You could have two good teams make it a bad game. So, yeah, I'm not too worried about that. And the game was good. Even though it was poor quality, it did make it an exciting affair. I mean, we'll get onto the game now. I mean, seeing a 40-yard rush from Mariota, seeing missed field goals, a lot of fourth down stops, third down stops, it was good. It went down to the end, went to overtime. The fourth overtime in international game history, and the second in as many weeks.
And the second involving us.
Yes, that's right. And then also Panthers Giants last year in Germany, Falcons Colts a couple weekends ago, and then Dolphins Commanders. And I'm sorry to make about me here, but I've been to all these games in America, games in London, games in Europe. My second ever overtime game. I've been to all these games, all these stadiums, but only twice now have I seen an overtime game. So, yeah, historic stuff. Obviously, Zinedine Zidane making an appearance on the which is really cool. Roger Goodell was also there as well. But the game itself, this was the game I felt like both teams were trying to lose. I felt like there was the decision not to go for on fourth down. Sorry, decision to go for it on fourth down and not kick a field goal. I made a comment on our group chat about how I feel the analytics guys are way too much now. And if they weren't a thing, we might have won this game in normal time, in regular play in the fourth quarter. But you had the Matt Gay field goal to win it late on in the game. You had the interception from Jack Jones to ultimately win it for them, because they put the Dolphins in field goal range. And Riley Patterson kicked the field goal from 29 yards to win this game for the Dolphins, to move them to 4-7 and the Commanders to 3-8. I mean, I overall had a good experience of the game. Team one wasn't a pretty win, but a win's a win, especially how the season's gone. But for you as a Commanders fan, in what, you know, has been overall really underwhelming season, I mean, for you watching out in the stands, you had the chance to win it there, you had the field goal opportunity to win it, and then to not win it, and you had the ball first in overtime as well. What was your take on the game?
So the big thing, I actually go back to the miss that Matt Game had around about 50 yards midway through, I think the second quarter. It might have been the first quarter, I'm not quite sure. But eventually, that would have put us up, because obviously when Debo scored the touchdown with the 6-7 celebration, whatever the hell that is, it put us up 13-6, and it should have been 16-6. And at that point, that would have been a huge difference, I think. Those 3 points that they make it a two-score game, massive difference. We stop. We obviously go for it in the red zone. We get it into first and goal at the 5. We end up fourth and goal at the 1, and Zaka slips. Obviously, Jalen Waddle had a tip ball, obviously, from Wagner on that play. Then, obviously, we stop you. And I'm thinking, okay, we get the ball here. 4 minutes to go. Beautiful. And obviously, Jalen Lane's out. So our secondary punt returner, Michael Sanders, is on the field, and then he fumbles the football. Like, you can't do that. Like, I think one of the biggest regressions this year has been Sanders still, because I loved him coming out of Michigan. He made some huge plays for Michigan on the route to their national championship. In 2024, he was absolutely outstanding in the back end of our defense. This year, he's been absolutely a liability, to be brutally honest. He dropped an arm punt from Tua, and then obviously he made the fatal play. I agree with you. I think that if Achan hadn't gone down injured on the third and goal at the 1, obviously where he got his eye poked, actually, that the refs completely missed. By the way, the refereeing in this game, as per usual, really, at the moment, I don't think there's any good crew out there in the NFL, if I'm being brutally honest. I don't rate any of the referee crews. I think they're horrible. But missing that call obviously then meant the Dolphins had to burn a timeout as it goes under 2 minutes. It meant then the clock stopped. What you could have done, if you'd have managed to get it all the way down to the 1 minute 20, as probably McDaniel wanted to, I think he would have then taken the points. But with 1 minute 40 to go, you're probably thinking, right, okay, let's just go down the field and let's just go for the touchdown. I don't like the call, but I understand it. The problem with Mariota in that game in particular, that he was sailing so many balls well over the receiver's head. And he tried to make a play in overtime, first play from overtime. And obviously, Jack Jones made an unbelievable play, got in front of the ball. It's a shocking throw anyway. Like, why are you throwing into that close of a man coverage? Like, it's just not feasible at all. And especially in the new overtime rules, where you've got 10 minutes, you might as well just try and run some clocks, see how you go. But it just sums up the season, really. And then Matt Gay's already been cut, which is great news. He should have been left in Madrid. In my brutal honest opinion, he hasn't been able to make a 50-yarder all year, really. He's had massive troubles from 50-plus. And unfortunately, you miss one kick, it happens. If you miss two, you got to go. It's as simple as that. So I think it just sums up the season, really, from the Commanders' perspective. You know, yes, there's been a lot of injuries. You can't deny that. Obviously, Jaden being out, Terry being out, huge from an offensive side of things. Obviously, Dorrance Armstrong, Wise gone for the year, Eckler gone for the year. There's been a lot of injuries. But from a defensive standpoint, the defense has not been good all season long. It's been abysmal. Like, against the run, we've been terrible. Against the pass, it's been terrible. I'm amazed, from McDaniel's point as a sort of analytics coach, that he got away from Achan in the game, because he was running roughshod throughout the game. And then there was no real runs to the outside, which is where the Commanders have been beaten quite a fair bit. So I'm struggling here to say that obviously Joe Witt Jr. needs to go as a defensive coordinator. He's already been relieved of his duties as DC. He should be gone and out the building. I'm worried, though, a little bit, I think. I'm worried a little bit, because I think that if Dan Quinn continues on this skid, and I'm looking down the schedule right now, I've got no idea where the Commanders' next win comes from, right? Even after the bye. And I think that if you go down at 3-14, as much as goodwill as he had last year, with that 12-game losing streak, you got a clean house. You'll have to go. So it's as simple and as plain as that, really. But it just sums up the Commanders' season. But it does look as good for a top five draft pick, which is great. Get some edge rushing. That'll be fun. That'd be fabulous.
Yeah, you made the point about Dan Quinn. I mean, his time in Atlanta pretty much collapsed since he lost that Super Bowl to the Patriots. And I think that, you know, there's certain managers in football and certain coaches where they'll start off really well, but the more their ideas come in, the more things start to fade away. So I think, you know, you think about the injuries. I think the injuries will ultimately, I think, keep him in the role. I do think that having almost the get-out-of-jail-free card is, oh, well, we've had Daniels injured, we've had... You know, that's why Robert Saleh kept his job for so long with the Jets, is because he had that get-out clause as, oh, well, we haven't got the quarterback. So I do feel like he will have another year. I think that the run he had last year, they'll come to their minds and they'll think, well, people were injured this year. I think, you know, if he comes out next year and everyone's healthy and that season happens again, I think there's no doubt then... absolutely clean house. But I do feel like one season where it has been injury hit, I think it'll buy him some time. I think next season will be the one where, if you start 2-5, if you start 3-6, 1-7, 2-8, I think that's when you would start looking at, oh, maybe Dan Quinn isn't the guy to take you forward. But I think right now he's got that excuse of the injury. So for me, I think it'd be absolutely fine.
It just depends, really, I think, to be honest with you, Andy. Like, if you go 12 in a row where you lose, because they were 3-2, don't forget, back in October. They'd just beaten the Chargers, come back quite strongly in that game. But then they've had, what was it, four straight games where they've been blown out by 20 points or more. And they've given up 586 yards of total offense to the Detroit Lions. Now, I'm not saying the Lions are the juggernaut, they are. But I'm just seeing that if you go 12 straight loss, you can't do it. It's just not possible. It's just not feasible. And you will have to clean house. It's a shame. But there we go.
Well, we've just talked about, you know, cleaning house, but I do feel like the last 4 weeks should really be proof that maybe don't be reactionary, because I think I was saying the exact thing about McDaniel about a month ago, saying, right, I still think he's not a head coach material, but yeah, I'll say this a month ago, clean house, you know, get rid of all this, some of the assets, you know, get some draft picks, maybe keep them just to get a higher draft pick. But in the last month, you know, yeah, there was a horrible loss in amongst that to the Browns, but the Falcons win was amazing. The win against Bills was incredible. And then this win wasn't the best performance, but it was one where, you know, it was, you know, you found the way to win, where it's been times this year, you know, you lose despite being up with 40 seconds left against the Chargers, you're 17 points up against the Panthers, you lose by just a handful of points to the Patriots and Bills early on in the season. So I think, you know, these kind of wins, the team needs them. And I feel like we have seen a much more improved team the last few weeks. And I feel like with the run we've got coming up, you know, you've got the Saints to come, you've got the Jets coming up, you've got the Steelers, who could be without Aaron Rodgers after their game against the Bengals mm-hmm. on the weekend. So there's a chance there. You know, we've got the Buccaneers and the Patriots in our last two games. That's probably, you know, 1-1, if not 0-2. You know, we kind of have to rely on these teams resting players because they're already in the playoffs to win those games. But, you know, we beat the Bills, we prove we can beat good teams. So you never know. But I think, you know, he saved his job for now. I think he's definitely there till the end of the season. There's been rumours that Ross wants to keep him beyond the season, which, you know, we saw on Sunday. I mean, you know, there was a funny moment, which I didn't get to get on camera because it was so quick and sort of where we were. Normally, you go to these post-match press conferences and, you know, the head coach always comes out first. It's been routine, whether it's London, you know, anywhere else, Dublin, always the head coach comes out first. But there was player after player after player. McDaniel was nowhere to be seen. We were thinking, right, we can't, because normally you can see the players, because we were front row, you can see normally the players almost like behind the curtain, you can see them waiting. So, you know, oh, we're going to have this person next. We're thinking, oh, Ollie Gordon next. And then we're thinking, there's no McDaniel. He's obviously not doing the presser. And then I think the second to last question Gordon had, McDaniel walks and he sits in amongst the media chairs, like second row. So the wow. guy, there's a guy, Ander, who I'm meeting, who's coming on the podcast in a few weeks from Spain, he's literally sat next to him, just sat there. And then he goes and asks a question to Ollie Gordon, what you thought from the coach. I saw in that moment there, you know, when he's then going up and he's sort of dapping him up. The players clearly love McDaniel. Now, whether that's through his own fault, I don't know, because I think sometimes there's this feeling like he wants to be everyone's friend rather than be a disciplinarian. But the players clearly love him. So I think he's definitely bought himself time for the rest of the season. I think, you know, if we end the season 8-7, you know, something like that, or 8-9, maybe even 9-8, I think he will stay another year. I think if he lost that game against the Commanders, there were some horrific calls from him in that game. I think if he lost that, I do feel like that may have been stay in Madrid, mate. You're not coming back sort of mentality. But, you know, got the win. I think we'll see, you know, I think we'll see the team win the next two or three games after the bye week. And then it just comes down to, is Rodgers back? And are the Patriots and Buccaneers, are they resting players at this point? So, yeah, I think we've saved what has been a horrific season. You know, 4-7 now. Only one win behind the Chiefs, which is crazy. Who'd have thought that after, you know, going 1-7? So, obviously, they've got about three losses less than us. So, you know, there's that element as well. No, there's only two losses less even. So, yeah, there's hope still left in the season. We've had some, I forgot his name now, but there's been obviously Jack Jones had a nice couple of weeks, you know, forced fumble, interception. The name's completely fancy by tackle leader in the NFL, Jordan Brooks. You know, he's
yeah, that's right. Yep.
Made some great third down stops, him and other players, 7 third down stops in this game. So there's positives, there is positives in what's been a horrendous season. But let's move on to the rest of the slate. So there was a game on last night involving the Cowboys and the Raiders. In the first game, post the death of Marshawn Leland, and the Cowboys comfortably beat the Raiders by 33-16. And on Thursday Night Football, the Patriots moved to 9-2 as they beat the New York Jets by 27-14. Now, moving on to the rest of the Sunday slate, Jarlath, first of all for you, What game caught your eye on Sunday?
I don't like saying this. I really don't like saying this at all. Sunday night football for me, it is, Andy. And that is because what has been proved, and I hate to say this, that those bastards in green are still the number one team in the National Football League. That is right. I'm talking about the Philadelphia Eagles, and I do not like giving them praise, not just because they're a division rival, but because a man who has been on this podcast a few times, Cam McFarlane, is my co-host on the pod, and he is an Eagles fan. Look, to be objective for a moment here, the Eagles are just too good. And defensively in particular, the loss of, I don't know how many players they lost really in free agency. It's just ridiculous, right? You know, they lost, what is it? They lost big play Slay. He's gone straight over to the side of the other side of Pittsburgh. Hasn't really done that great. You've got Sweat, Milton Williams, Rodgers, Maddox, Brandon Graham retired on the offensive line as well, and Gainwell and Becton as well, all gone. But they've still got such weapons. I mean, Jalen Carter, yes, he may have spit that Prescott a few times, but he's a game wrecker. No matter what happens, he's an absolute game wrecker. You've also got Zach Bourne in the middle of that defense in the linebacker position, who is just, I think, possibly the best linebacker in football right now. I know that might be a big claim, but I do genuinely believe that he is. And also, as well, in the backfield, you've got Cooper DeJean, who's now starting to play at the level that we saw in the playoffs last year. But the big thing is, obviously, Q Island has been closed out. Kenyon Mitchell is just now starting to really take off back to that level again that he was that good. Right. And on offense as well, yes, people might say, oh, well, AJ Brown hasn't done this and Devontae Smith hasn't done that and all the rest of it. But I don't wish this to sound like a criticism of him. But Jalen Hurts is the perfect game manager. And that is no way near trying to be disrespectful. Right. Because Jalen Hurts, he can do exactly what you need him to do. If you need him to just score 17 or 20 points and get the job done, we'll do that. If you need him to go and score 40, then he'll do that as well. And he's just that good. It's as simple and as plain as that, right? Obviously, Saquon had not been the same level, but he was never going to be because the last year was a ridiculous level for him, but he's still breaking runs. And they held one of the highest scoring offenses in the league. And everybody's lovely darlings, let's be honest about it. Everybody wants to see the Lions do well. They held him to 9 points. You know, Jahmyr Gibbs had a great game, in particular at the backfield, I thought was very good. I mean, Amon-Ra was good, but the key difference here was that on fourth down, the Eagles pretty much every time managed to find a way to stop. And what it's proved to me is that certainly the NFC is going to run through Philly again. No doubt about that. But also, if you want to go and win the Super Bowl, you have to go and beat the defending champions, because I do not know a side right now that is looking likely to go and beat the Philadelphia Eagles. And that pains me to say it, but it is God's honest truth.
You know what? I kind of agree with you. I've been criticised a lot on this podcast for maybe not giving the Eagles their credit where credit's due. You know,
and quite rightly so, because no one likes Philadelphia. Let's have it right. You know, no one likes Philly, but that's fine. No, I'm joking, of course, Philly fans. No, I'm not really, but it's fine. But you have, yes, but carry on. Sorry, I need to throw that in there.
I mean, yeah, it's you know, I forgot where I was going with this now, but essentially, you know, there's, I kind of feel like maybe they are the favourites to win it now, because I've said the Lions all year long, pre-season, I said our Lions are going to go and make the win the NFC. And I think we've seen every team in the league has had their inconsistencies. The Buccaneers started off well. They've been a bit hit and miss since. You know, Lions have had random losses to Packers, the same thing. They've lost to the Panthers and the Browns, and they've beaten good teams as well on that. You know, there's not many teams, I think, are playing as consistently right now as the Eagles, apart from maybe the Bears. And you mentioned all the
Rams
players
as well.
The Rams. They got one on Sunday. Their win was against the Seahawks, a 21-19 win with a last gasp field goal miss from Jason Myers. But I think this Eagles team for me is there to be a contender once again, because I think one thing, you know, in a league where there's no real outright favourite this year, every team sort of is being each other, you need consistency. And I think this Eagles team is that. It's not flashy, it's not a sexy football to watch, but at the end of the day, you're not going to care whether you play well or not when, you know, you win games and you win rings. So for me, that's how you win Super Bowls. The Patriots won never really that, apart from their best season they had to watch was the one where they didn't even win the Super Bowl, the 07 season.
2008. Absolutely. I'm thinking 2008, that was when the Super Bowl happened. But yeah, you're completely right. Best offense in the history of the National Football League. And this is the thing. I always say two things. One about the Rams. I just want to go back to the fact that obviously appreciate week three is a completely different ball game. But remember, the Rams were way up on the Philadelphia Eagles in that game. And they lost in the end. Obviously, they lost 33-26. Big thing here, obviously, with a touchdown, obviously, off of the blocked field goal at the end. But the big thing here, for me at least, is that with Rams, that I don't know if I can call it a soft schedule, because I think the NFC West is possibly the best division in football right now. But you look at the rest of it. Obviously, you've got Tampa Bay, Carolina coming out for the next couple of weeks, Arizona, then Detroit, Seattle, Atlanta, and Arizona. They could still probably theoretically finish 14-3, I think, and they could get to the point where they might win and maybe get the number one seed. But having already lost to Philly earlier on in the season, it's important. And like you say, and as I often say, history books don't care how teams win games, they care who wins them. And right now, Philly, doesn't matter how you do it, they are winning games. And until such time as someone can go and beat them, that's it. They are the favourites for me.
Yeah, and I think the trade deadline has been massive. Then getting Jalen Phillips in has been huge. I mean, so far in two games, he's had 12 quarterback pressures. He got, I think, three tackles and a sack in this game. He's been completely, so far, revolutionary. Now, as a Dolphins fan, I want to warn all Eagles fans that actually his injury record is pretty bad. So for me, you know, that's going to come. He's going to get injured at some point, but what difference he's made. And actually, I want to touch on his comments he made on Twitter the other day, because there's been a lot of narrative around this move. Never really gave much of a goodbye speech on Instagram to the Dolphins. Called it the best day of his life when he ended up, you know, making the move. And someone put a tweet out saying, basically calling him a douchebag. Says, incredible. Mm-hmm. Phillips, 30 seconds of living in Philly to turn into a douche. I hate this. Could have just stayed humble about this. Good riddance. And he's quoted this tweet from a guy who only got less than 1,000 followers. He's not exactly like a media person, just a regular fan. He's responded to him. And he said that if anyone would like to take the time to actually listen to interviews instead of making assumptions based on clickbait, they would realise that I've been nothing but humble and grateful for the opportunity to play for an incredible Eagles organisation. I never once said a single negative word about the Miami organisation. I'm grateful for the 5 years in Miami I had. But I'm also saying this is an exciting moment and opportunity in my life and career. These things are not mutually exclusive. Thank you, go Birds. So, you know, interesting Twitter drama involving him. But yeah, he's been a massive, massive game changer. And you know, it was a 16-9 win for the Eagles. And the fact you're, like you said, held the Lions to that little point is incredible. But I will say, there was a horrendous call right at the end of the game. For pass interference on AJ Brown. That is, if Chris Collinsworth is even calling it out on national TV, then you know that for me is it. Like, that shows how bad the call is. I thought it's one of the worst calls I've seen this year. I would say that was a horrendous call.
I think the big thing is, as I come back to earlier, I don't think that there's a great NFL refereeing crew at all this year. And that is a very bad place for the sport to be in. Like, I mean, look, the likes of Bill Vinovich, I still think is an absolutely outstanding referee. There's a couple, I think, as well. I think Brad Allen as a referee is very good. I think his crew's terrible. But I think that him as a referee and how he controls the game, same with Sean Hockley. You know, he's like his dad in the same breath of how good he is at controlling a game. But my Christ, there are some awful referees. How Alex Kemp continues to be in the league is beyond my comprehension. How Sean Smith continues to be in the league is beyond my comprehension. How the hell he's working a championship game a couple of seasons back or last season was ridiculous. I just don't think that there are that many good referees and crews at the moment. And that is a bad place for the number one sport possibly in the world in terms of following to be in, because all you're going to get now is so many people going, oh, it's rigged, it's this, it's Vegas, it's that, it's whatever. And you can't be in that scenario. I understand that referees have a tough job. You know, I did it myself for a couple of years in football, rugby referee as well. So I understand that it's difficult, but it's not that you don't get chances every single week to try and prove yourself that you're that good. Do you know what I mean? The level of officiating has to improve, because there are too many bad calls and too many situational calls, I think, where they, I don't know how to put this gently,
where it's interpretation. There's a lot of times where it's interpretation. And I think that is where it's more frustrating, because one person will call pass interference for a particular call. The next week you'll see exactly the same with a different crew and they won't call it. You need consistency. It's as simple and as plain as that. But yes, I agree. The fact that Chris Collinsworth's calling it out, a man who is sometimes can be, you know, close to the bone in terms of making sure that he sticks to the NFL line. Let's be honest about it. You know, he's not known for giving his opinions. That's right, you know. So, yeah, I totally agree with you. It's an awful call. And again, it just goes to show you, I think, that the whole of this season, there isn't that much talent in the officiating crew. And I don't think that's a bad call to say, to be brutally honest.
Yeah, I think every year, I mean, I think football's the same thing. There's so many inconsistencies with, you know, like, you know, you think about, you know, there's been a decision recently in the Premier League with, you know, an offside given against Liverpool when the same thing was being given, you know, in favour of City a year before that. So it happens everywhere. Sadly, I think now as well, with the reliance on technology, you're more likely to be lazy and not make the right call. And sometimes, you know, they'll deem that to be not a clear and obvious error. So I think there's definitely scope for these referees to become more lazy, because they're now even more reliant on technology, whereas they're not relying so much on their, you know, on what they see on the pitch.
This is something that Dan Orlovsky said on Get Up a number of seasons ago, and I've not forgotten it, and I totally agree with him. What they should do is they should have, especially with the amount of technology that's available and how many cameras are at NFL games now that the broadcasters give them, there should be like a replay official up in the booth. If you throw a flag, there should be someone in real time that goes, I can confirm that or overturn that call. It's as simple and as plain as that. And it wouldn't stop the game even more. It wouldn't change anything. It's only if they throw the flag, it's sort of a VAR, if you like, for the NFL. It wouldn't change anything, because the replay official can just look at it and go, yep, that's a flag, call it. Simple as that. And they should do that. But it's just that thought of, will they do it? I don't think so. Big League's going to get money either way, so it doesn't make a blind bit of difference.
I think those who are listening who are British will not want VAR in the NFL. That would be horrendous.
Be great. Why not? Let's do that.
Well, moving on to the rest of the Sunday slate, and there was wins for the Panthers. They earned a 30-27 win in overtime via a field goal against the Atlanta Falcons. It was a win for the Jaguars against the Chargers by 35-6, as the Jaguars got their season back on track.
Can I just say with that, sorry to interrupt, Danny, but can I just say with that, what the hell was going on with that game? I mean, it's the most Chargers thing I've ever seen in my life. You know, I'm not saying the Jaguars aren't a decent side. I think they are, but they're not, you know, they're not world beating. Let's put it that way. The Chargers just charged all over the place. It was a shocking performance. And again, it just goes to show you that the problem with the Chargers is that, yes, they do look good. And sometimes they do look great and they perform so well. But then in clutch moments or in just random moments, they just collapse. And that's why I don't think that they are going to make that much noise in the playoffs. I think they'll get there, obviously, but I don't think they're going to make much noise in the playoffs.
I agree. I think, you know, as much as I love watching Herbert and I love watching him play, in a lot of big games, he doesn't do that. And the game I can think of is the Chiefs game this year, where he did do well, but that was a neutral venue. That was week one in a neutral venue. I still have this doubt whether in a big moment in the playoffs, we saw it in the, funny enough, against the Jaguars.
Absolutely right.
And the Texans last year. So I think, you know, Jim Harbaugh gives me hope that they will at least win a playoff game. But then, as good as Herbert's been, he's not done it in the playoffs yet. And if they're missing O-linemen at that point in the season when they come to the wildcard round, I think if that performance there, if they keep having lack of a star lineman available, I still don't think the playoffs is out of realm to not make. I still think there's a chance, you know, for that they could. I mean, I'm looking at their next few games. If I look at, you know, their next few games, so they've got the Raiders. Fair enough, that's probably a win after their bye week in week 12. And then they've got the Eagles, the Chiefs, and the Cowboys in a 3-game stretch, and the Broncos in week 18. So realistically, then, and the Houston Texans in week 17, their team that can is so unpredictable. So, like, you think that could easily, they could either go 1-5. They could either go 1-5 in the last five games if they keep having these injuries at the O-line position. You know, Herbert went out for a bit in the game, but you know, that schedule there is not easy for the Chargers at all. And I think there's a chance where they could easily finish the season with 8 wins easily. So I think they'll make the playoffs. I think they will, but that schedule is brutal. I think there's definitely a a world where they don't make the playoffs.
That game on the 14th of December against Kansas City could turn into a massive shootout for who makes the AFC West from the playoffs, because Kansas City, I mean, we'll probably talk about that game a bit later, obviously, with the Broncos and their loss to them. But that game could be massive in terms of being able to make the playoffs, and as well the factors in Arrowhead too. Mm. It's huge. That's huge. Already.
I agree, because you think about Bills and Pats are probably in the playoffs. You know, they're probably in. I think they're definitely in. You know, the AFC South, I think you'll see, obviously, the Colts. And then I think they'll be between the Jags, two teams in the AFC West, and then battling out for those two final wildcard spots. So for me, yeah, I think there's definitely a chance where I think the Chiefs will make it. I think they'll find a way. I think they got too good of a quarterback and too good of a head coach to not make the playoffs. I think it would take an almighty collapse. They've got a tough schedule. I think that Colts game is huge. If they lose that game, and they got other teams coming up who are tough as well, you never know.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this is where I was going to talk about, you know, you were talking about Fraud Watch last week, and I want to try and build on that a little bit. You know, this is a big moment here for Indy next week to come. I know you'll preview it next week on the show, but this is a big moment here for Indianapolis to prove they are a decent side, that they aren't just beating up us on a soft schedule, right? I think the Patriots are frauds. I don't mind saying that this year. I think that they are benefiting for a soft schedule. That's fine. It happens. I don't think the Broncos are any good. I think their defense is outstanding, but I don't think their quarterback is any good, and I don't think it will lead them to wins in the playoffs, even if they do get number one seed and everyone having to go up to Mile High. This is a moment for Indy to be able to not just prove that they are a contender to get out of the AFC and make the Super Bowl. This is a chance to potentially knock Thor himself out of January, because Patrick Mahomes is basically, in the AFC at least, is unbeatable in January. There's only two quarterbacks that have ever beaten him in the playoffs. Well, sorry, there's only one quarterback in the AFC that's beaten him in the playoffs. Tom Brady obviously beat him in Super Bowl 55 and Hurst Super Bowl 59. But there's only one quarterback that's done it in the playoffs in the AFC, and that is Joe Burrow, obviously alongside Brady in the championship game in 2018. So this is a big moment, because if you can knock Thor himself, the man who is unbeatable, out of January, this is a big moment for the Chiefs as well, because they have got, as you say, you look at their schedule, Indy at home, Dallas away on Thanksgiving at 4:30. That's going to be possibly the most watched regular season game in NFL history, by the way. Book it now.
I was saying the same thing to Sky Pank on the weekend. I was saying the exact same thing. That will be the most watched game in regular season in NFL history, without a doubt.
Not even close, especially with the new way they're measuring and all that sort of stuff. I think the record is 52.2 or something like that for the Dallas Cowboys against New York Giants in 2022. I could easily see that with the new measuring system easily topping 60 mil, which would be massive. Obviously, then you've got Houston, as you say, Los Angeles, Tennessee is probably their only gimme game at that point, Denver at home as well, and then Vegas away. So they've probably got two gimmies in the sense of the Titans and the Raiders. The rest of that schedule looks difficult, and they'll have to try and get three or four big wins out of that if they want to be playing January football. It's as simple as that.
I agree. And as well, this is a team that actually Mahomes has never been knocked out earlier than the conference championship. He's never had a divisional round loss. He's never had a playoff absent season. So this is big stuff. And I think for the Colts to do it, I think, you know, they can get a win in Arrowhead. I think that would, for Daniel Jones naysayers, I think that would really, you know, really boost his stock and really think, right, he actually is, you know, he is the guy that can actually, I don't think he is. I think this is last year's Vikings. I think we'll see.
Yeah. I totally agree.
Final week of the season, playoffs. I think they'll go one and done. And I think they could be the one seed and still be one and done, personally, in that divisional round. But, you know, I think you think about the rest of it. And we'll talk about one team in a minute, but you think there's not in the AFC. I think the AFC loses Super Bowl no matter what. I think NFC is way stronger. But yes. Think about, you know, Bills, Chiefs, you know, Colts. You know, I don't see a favorite there, and I think this is why I think for me, sadly, I think the Patriots could be that team that actually, you know, go on and win the AFC. I think they're pretenders. I don't think they'll. I think they'll still lose. I think that, but I don't know who. I think this is why I still think if the Chiefs make it, I can see him still winning the AFC, because you think about 100%. I see Daniel Jones becoming Sam Darnold from last season in that playoff game. I don't trust the Bills away from my Highmark.
I trust the Bills at Highmark. I don't trust the Bills at high mark in the playoffs. I just don't trust the Bills in the playoffs. There's too many things that have happened in that franchise history. There's a black cat running around that franchise, as the great Stephen A. would always say about the Dallas Cowboys. He can also say the same about the Bills. There's too many moving parts in there that do not work for the Bills. Josh Allen is an absolute talent at the quarterback position. He, alongside Patrick, is starting to revolutionize the way that the quarterback is played. But I just do not trust that defense in a big game. And I don't trust Josh Allen in the clutch moments because he hasn't delivered. He always beats Patrick in the regular season. He's never beaten him in the playoffs in four games now. Four games they've had a chance to beat him and he hasn't done it. Yeah. Until such time as he can, it's the same with Lamar. I don't trust Lamar to go and win a Super Bowl for the Ravens, even though they're starting to maybe look good. I know we're going to touch on that in a minute. They're starting to really get there a little bit now, obviously, at the moment. But I just do not trust Josh Allen in the clutch moment. And until such time as that happens, I can't change my mind on that.
I tell you what. If the Bengals had gone, you know what, T. Higgins, you're asking too much. We'll get a receiver in who's just as serviceable for less money and sort the defense out. They have the one quarterback that I would trust in a big game more than my home.
Correct.
Joe Burrow has proved that he's beaten the Chiefs, almost should have beat them again if it wasn't for some horrific officiating. This could have been their year to do it because Jamar Chase is an incredible, probably the best receiver in the league. You know, I question the running back room a little bit, but you know, this year could be nice to take him because the Ravens have been hit and miss. Lamar Jackson, like Josh Allen, hasn't done it in the playoffs. Whilst I do think that Manning had that and eventually answered that critical, I think this is a year that we're going to see one of these quarterbacks like Allen or Jackson finally do it. But I still think in a big moment, even on the road and they're the 17th, I still think the Chiefs right now, I still back them to it because in the day, they're not going to care whether they play well in week 12 or week 11 or week 9. As long as you're in the raffle,
in the dance,
you can win it. I still think right now there's no other clear. If this was the Ravens of 2 years ago, 2023, or the Bills had carried on momentum from the first 6 weeks, I was saying Bills all year for that reason, apart from maybe the preseason predictions. I would back them. But now I think the way it's gone this season, the last few weeks, I still think... I don't trust Bo Nix in a big playoff game. I think the defense.
I don't trust Bo Nix at anything, to be honest. I don't trust him at all. I think he's an. I'm not just trying to defend that because of what happened, obviously, that the Broncos took him after we took Jaden. That has nothing to do with that. I just don't trust his arm. I don't trust his ability. I think his offensively has been a shock, has been an absolute abysmal. And I think the defense has carried that side. There's nothing wrong with that. There's more than one way to win a football game. I'm not trying to dismiss that. But if that defense doesn't play well, can you trust Bo Nix in a big scenario? I'm not sure yet.
No.
I'm not sure yet. No. You know, and the big thing here is that you say with the Chiefs, just final point on them. Obviously, I know the Chiefs lost to the Broncos 22-19 last week. If the Chiefs do go on and win, right, and if they do make the playoffs, until such time as the team beats them, you have to call them the favourites. They have earned that right in the same way with the Patriots all those years ago. You know, until some, they've earned that right.
I totally agree. I think the Broncos defense could do what Manning had in this final year. I do think that's the one team. I think when you've got a head coach like Sean Payton who has done it when it matters in the playoffs, you know, should have really made two Super Bowls with that, you know, the call against the Rams. Whilst albeit on the same side, they did have Bounty Gate, which helped them get in the first time round. But Sean Payton is a good head coach, and their defense is one of the best in the league by a country mile, in the AFC especially. So I think they're the one team I think could, especially if they are the winners of that division, if they host a championship game in Mile High against the Chiefs, I think they're the one team that could do it because I think that defense is so legit. But I still, whether it's the Chiefs, whether it's the Broncos, the Bills, the Colts, I still think they come up against the Rams, the Lions, the Eagles, even the Bucks, I think they lose. So I think it's NFC year again. I think it's the NFC's year again. Unless you have a situation where, I don't know, maybe the Seahawks or someone like a shock team makes it into the Super Bowl. I think otherwise than that, I do believe it's. I think they win. Personally, I think the AFC's nowhere near as strong personally as the NFC right now. But looking at the other games, there were wins for the 49ers over the Cardinals. They won by 41-22. There was a win for the Texans over the Titans by 16 points to 13, a 34-12 win for the Steelers over the Bengals, and you had a win for the Packers, who won by 27-20 to the New York Giants, and the Bears earned another win as they moved to 7-3 with a 19-17 win over the Vikings, which is a controversial moment after the game involving their locker room and McCarthy. As well as we mentioned it as well, Broncos beat the Chiefs 22-19, and the Browns, they lost narrowly to the Ravens by 23-16, which saw Shedeur Sanders get some time on the field. But the game that caught my eye was Bills-Bucks. Bills-Bucks, for me, that's one of the games of the season. I think it's got the either the most or second most lead changes of the season. It's an incredible, incredible game. So back and forth. 44-32 to the Bills. They finally broke their poor run of form. Josh Allen had 6 touchdowns in total, 3 in the air and 3 on the ground. We also saw James Cook run for 100 total yards in total. We saw Sean Tucker get 2 touchdowns, over 100 yards, 3 touchdowns in total. Baker Mayfield only had 2 touchdowns, 1 pick. But there were so many highlights from this game. Not a good game for defensive fans, but what a game this was. And I think the Bucks, I think such a good start to the season. They look a bit leggy right now. They look a bit not quite how they were maybe to start of the year. But I thought this is the win for the Bills. That, you know, we talked about the Bills not beginning to trust them, but I think this could be a win that galvanised their season. You know, not saying they're going to win the AFC, but there's a good chance they don't. But also, if they win the AFC, they'll look back at this game and think that was a game that changed our season.
Yeah, there is that sort of argument. I think the big thing is with Tampa Bay is that, like you said, they started on a little bit of a dip, but I still don't see anybody in that division. I know Carolina are only half a game back, but I still don't see Carolina challenging them at all for the NFC South crown. So it is what it is. I mean, the fact is now they're behind the Bears in the playoff race. They're obviously Bears are now number 3 seed, and the Tampa Bay are 4. I mean, it's quite interesting actually when you look at it. Obviously, last year with the Hail Mary, what I call the Hail Mary land now, obviously they'd spiral the Bears' season, 12 out of 13 losses on the way down for their coach to go. And while we obviously soared into the playoffs and into the championship game. Whereas this year, obviously, Jaden had that fumble on the drive that would have won us the game, probably would have finished it off. And now look at us. We've gone lost 6 in a row and the Bears have won pretty much everything. Again, I saw a very good post on social media where it said it can't be a coincidence that a guy from Chicago is now elected the Pope and the Bears are now winning all these games in the last few seconds. You know, it can't be a coincidence at all. But going back to the Bills, yes, it's a huge result. And I'm very grateful for Josh Allen giving me 45 fantasy points. So thank you very much for that, Josh. Again, these are those sort of games where I get more frustrated with the Bills because they're clearly good enough. I'm not saying they're not good enough to go on and win big pots and to go and win the AFC and to get into the Super Bowl. But it's games like this which are more frustrating for me because you just think, if they could put this up in January and not freeze in the big moment, it could be just fantastic. But, you know, it's a big result. Huge result for them. Obviously, looking ahead for their schedule as we look at it, you know, they've still obviously got a game against the Patriots, which will probably determine the AFC East 100%. I mean, the Texans on Thursday night is a big game. Steelers away on the night after Thanksgiving. Obviously, they've got the bye coming up. And you've got the mini bye coming up after Thursday Night Football. But look at that. Texans, Steelers, Bengals, Patriots, Browns, and then the Eagles before the Jets. Some big games coming up there, and they have to win big games if they're going to be considered a true contender for me.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want to thank Josh Allen for the fantasy points because I've been about 6 or 7 leagues, and I think he's my quarterback in about 4 of them. So yeah, he is the best quarterback by a mile to have. He's just insane. But you know, I do think you mentioned the Bears there. I do think they should be looked at more. I think they should be seen as a dark horse. I think the Seahawks, I've not seen a team with 3 losses talked about as little as them. But I think we saw Sam Darnold of old come out in that game against the Rams. I think it was 4 picks in total in that game. I mean, Darnold has got an amazing story. And I would love to see a Colts Seahawks Super Bowl because it's 2 quarterbacks that have proved his doubters wrong. But it's those performances that I think, can I trust him in a big game? To quote the captain of Wolf of Wall Street, absolutely not.
No, completely agree. This is the problem with the Seahawks, is that, like you said, there are 7-3 side that's not being talked about anywhere near enough. And there is that element of it. But until such time as Darnold can deliver in big moments, I'm still not going to consider them a true contender. I think their defense is getting back to Legion of Boom sort of era. I'm not saying that they're comparable, but they're getting back there. I think that defense is really, really good. Really, really good. But I think if there is a team that are going to beat the Eagles this year, and I don't think there is one, but if there is one that can beat them, it's the Los Angeles Rams. They are set up for success. Puka Nacua has been an absolute star. Devontae Adams is a star on the other side of the ball. Kyren Williams is running that ball well. And they've still got a quarterback for me that is just the best clutch quarterback, bar Patrick Mahomes. I think he's the best clutch quarterback in the NFC, and that is Matthew Stafford. He's just out saying, and the defense is delivering as well in big moments. In particular, I know JSN was very good again for the Seahawks throughout the game. But yeah, it's really interesting, as you mentioned, with the Bears as well, because I don't think they're a flashy side. They're not really a flashy side, but they're getting bounces of the balls they didn't get last season. I think Caleb is delivering quite a fair bit now under Ben Johnson. I think he's starting to really start to show why he was picked number one. I think Roma Dunze is an absolutely outstanding weapon on the outside. I love Colson Loveland, have done for a while. I've said that he was going to be an absolute star, and he is. And DeAndre Swift and that mix now, obviously, alongside Monga Nui as well at the running back position. Offensively, they're doing quite well. And it's interesting. There's some hope for Chicago Bears fans, which is a very rare thing to happen.
It is. I mean, the Bears, for me, I think they're legit. I think they've got, you know, a lot of great players in a lot of different areas. I don't see many weaknesses. I mean, Caleb Williams is he's had no playoff game yet, so maybe he'll be a playoff choker, but he's been, I think the change of coach has really helped him a lot. I mean, Ben Johnson has been just amazing for him now. I don't think he's going to become that first quarterback this year to get the 4,000 yards no one's had in the team's history. So far, 2,329 with 13 touchdowns, only 4 picks, which is, I think, as impressive as 4,000 yards. So I think he needs, 1,670-ish yards. Could he get that? You never know. I think average game, 300 yards, 250 yards, and he's got currently 77 games left. So 7 times that is, oh my god!
You know, I'm not good with maths. That's not my wheelhouse.
I think this Bears team is really legit. I think the only thing they've got, I said before in the last episode, they were a tough division. You got the Packers and the Lions there. They're going to beat each other. I don't think anyone there is getting the number one seed in that division. I think this is why the Eagles could benefit because of such a poor division. And no offense to your team and the Cowboys.
No, it's true. True.
I think it's an exciting time. That really is actually quite a nice segue into our next point, which is something I want to ask all of our guests now we get towards the crunch time of the year. First of all, let's say you've been given the power, this used to be sent an email from the NFL, you get a vote in the MVP votes this year in the awards. Jarlath Eaton, you've been selected to make a pick for the MVP awards this season. Which player are you responding to that email with?
This is really tough because until last week, I had Dak Prescott as my MVP.
Really? Dak Prescott?
Yes, because I think that without him, this Dallas Cowboys team would be even worse than it is right now. And I think that he's putting up numbers that are off the damn scale. I mean, he has been, I'm not saying he's been fantastic, but in terms of when he has been brilliant, for me, he's been very, very good. He's in 2,587 yards this season. I think, you know, he's outstanding. I really do. But I do think right now, and I think the bye week has maybe helped him and possibly maybe think that he is the right person to do so. It's JT, isn't it? It's Jonathan Taylor. Give it to a running back. Give it to a bloke who has just been absolutely outstanding. 180, what is it? He's getting nearly, 6 yards? He's going at 6 yards a pop, 1,139 yards on 10 games, 15 touchdowns this year. You know, he's getting 113.9 yards a game and 58 first downs. Without him, I'm not saying obviously Tyler Warren has also been outstanding for that Colts offense, but without him in the backfield as a reliable Swiss Army knife and down-to-down running back, bell cow, whatever you want to call him, he's just been outstanding. So, yes, he will be my MVP pick right now. Joe, just give it to a running back for the first time in I don't know how many years. I think the last time they gave it to a running back possibly was 2012 when AP nearly broke the rushing record. So, yeah, give it to him. He's been great. How about yourself now? What's your thought on it, actually, as we get into week 12? I know you'll change throughout the season. That's fine. But who would it be?
Mine's changed. Mine was Baker Mayfield. After the first 6 weeks, I was saying Baker Mayfield. I think he was, for me, the outstanding player. But for me, I said this, just go back to, I stayed with Sky Pank on the weekend in Madrid, friend of the show from the franchise tag. I said to him that if Barkley has, 2,000 yards, because the ninth player ever to do it and still can't win MVP, I don't think any player can win MVP. He's not a quarterback. I think the only thing Sky said, which I think is a valid point, is that if he breaks LT's record of the 31 total touchdowns, I think then you could look at it and go, okay, it's a legitimate case. But I think if Barkley has, for me personally, maybe the best ever season I've seen from a running back in my 14 years watching the sport, 15 years watching the sport. If he can't win it off base of that, who can? I mean, mine goes to Matt Stafford. And I
was going to say, he's probably close second for me right now.
Yeah. I mean, Drake May's up there as well. Obviously, JT will be probably offensive player of the year. I think that's what he'll get. But I still think that for me, it's sad he has to come a quarterback award, sadly. Now, being the number one seed, if the Colts get that, and especially if he breaks the LT record, I think that would give him more of a chance. But as I said before, I still think if Barkley can't win it after last year, there's not hope for many. And I think that if there was maybe a quarterback who wasn't playing, there wasn't any quarterbacks who were playing that well, I would say maybe then that would get him the award. And I do think there's an element maybe, we're getting bored of picking quarterbacks now. Maybe subconsciously everyone will pick a running back for that reason. But I still think overall, for me personally, it's going to be a quarterback award. And I think right now I'd give it to Matt Stafford.
27 touchdowns and two INTs, by the way. That's just an outstanding season already. The QBR is not that great. It's 68.7, but 27-2 is just off the damn scale. Excellent stuff.
I agree. Second question for you, Jarlath, is right now, which two teams do you think are going to be playing in San Fran in Super Bowl 60 in February?
Well, I've already said that my prohibited favourite for the Super Bowl are the Philadelphia Eagles. So they will be coming out of the NFC unless something truly ridiculous happens. The AFC, that is a complete minefield. Until such time as they're not in the dance, I fear it's going to be a third time in 4 years and we're going to see the rematch. Chiefs versus Eagles. I think it'd be the first time in a long time. I don't know if there's ever happened where there's been a rematch for Super Bowl 2 years in a row. So, but if there's going to be one team that's going to stop KC from doing it right now, I'm not so sure. Because the AFC is a complete minefield. The only team I could see possibly doing it is the Bills, and I don't think they'll ever make a Super Bowl because they're just... because it just never happens to them. But yeah, no, sorry. Right now, Chiefs-Eagles. I will not be watching that game for the first time ever in 23 years of watching a Super Bowl. I would probably never watch that game, but I do think it's going to be that. Until such time as it doesn't happen.
I think you'll watch it. I think you'll find a way to watch it, even through gritted teeth.
Oh, trust me. When you have a young child, Andy... you do not, if you don't have to watch that game, it's great because there's so many different things. But no, it's honestly, I just don't see a team from the AFC being good enough to beat the different Chiefs. Because the Chiefs, there is a regular season Chiefs, and then it's the same way in basketball. There were the regular season Golden State Warriors, there were the playoff Golden State Warriors. There are the, you know, there's a regular season Chiefs and there's a playoff Chiefs. And until such time as someone can either knock them out and not make him let them in the dance, or they can get into the dance and they get beat, I've got to pick him. I've just got to pick him. It's boring, I know, but it is what it is.
You know what? They were my pick start of the year. I said a Chiefs-Lions Super Bowl. You know, and I do think that they are my favourites to win it. But I do think if they get it as the road team, I think there's one team with home advantage that could do it. I think I'm going to go for the Rams, because that was my pick pre-season before I saw the back injury to Stafford. So I picked the Lions. I would have gone for the Chiefs-Rams. So I'm going to go for the Rams. But I think they're going to play the Denver Broncos. I think you put Chiefs-Broncos in Mile High, AFC Championship game. That's the only place, stage-wise, I could see swallowing Mahomes up and beating him. I think he'd win in Highmark. I think he'd win in the Indy. I think he'd definitely win in Miami if we got so lucky to win. You know, I think personally, yeah, I think that's my pick right now. It changes all the time. I've had the Bills winning it for a lot this year, the AFC. But I think right now, I think that defense could carry, and the coaching could carry the Broncos into that Super Bowl. But I think whoever it is from the AFC, I think they'll lose to the Rams. And I think that'll be where Stafford hangs his cleats up and ends on a high, like Manning did for the Broncos 10 years ago in the same stadium. But there we are. That is a conclusion of our Week 11 review. How crazy is that to say? Before we go, I want to shout out Nigel. I met him on the airport after Berlin. I forgot to shout him out last time. And apologies, those, for our lack of Week 11 preview. We were just too busy with time, schedules over the place, couldn't quite find a guest. So apologies for that. And also, shout out to Thogden, if you're listening, because I did meet him at a media party after the event. But otherwise, Jarlath, first of all, thank you for coming on the show today.
Not a problem at all. It's been a great month. Just to say, as a wide thing on the NFL international games, it is always a pleasure every single year to go and do it. And you know, I just want to shout out very, very quickly, if I may, Andy. I just want to shout out the NFL Academy, because that was an unbelievable experience at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium doing that game against the Thomas Aquinas Raiders from Florida. Calling that game and being a PA for that, and it just goes to show you as well the amount of fans and how much the NFL continues to grow, and the Academy is doing some wonderful things of getting some players in. So more of it. I can't wait. We're probably going to France. You're probably going to go to Italy. You're going to be going to Africa, Melbourne next year. The NFL just continues to grow, and it's fantastic. But thank you so, so much for having me back on, mate. And great work as always.
Well, apologies. Actually, we had that in our running order. We're going to talk about your experience commentating on that game. I mean, just a quick touch. You mentioned it then, but just a quick touch on that experience. Being able to commentate at a game at what is a Premier League ground and now an NFL stadium.
It's just the most. It was just the most extraordinary fun. I've got to shout out the company that I do ever work for, which is Alan March Sport. Fantastic company. They've given me a lot of different jobs over the last 6 years, and they are a fabulous company to work for. I'm not just saying that, they are. James Beller, all the team there are unbelievable. And getting to call that game in stadium, being the public address announcer, was brilliant. And there was a pick six that I was really, really thrilled about. Getting a chance to shout pick six down a microphone and getting the crowd reaction, it's just that there's not much better things than it. But like I say, it's great that there's this pathway now for players that want to try and get into the NFL. There's this wonderful pathway now for them, and the NFL Academy are doing such amazing things. I did a game for them a couple of years ago in Loughborough, and that was a brilliant experience as well. And to be able to come and do the next one. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to do a lot of Bucks stuff as well. Bucks University of American Football in the UK. I'll be doing the finals there this year on the 24th of March of 2026, I think it is. I'll be doing the three games that we'll have for that. So that'll be great fun. Yeah, it's just an exciting time to be an NFL fan and an American football fan. You know, I mean, even college, I know you didn't talk about it on this program as well, but college as well is just off the damn scale again as well. Saturday nights are coming with the new Sunday nights, it feels like, at this point. It's just this lovely part of the season. But just go back to it very, very briefly, the NFL Academy are brilliant. Everything about that stadium is fantastic. If you've never done Tottenham, go do it. Just do it. It's the best stadium in the country by far. And getting to call a game in that was just unbelievable. I know you get to work in it and there's two games a year, Andy, but like I say, I'm sure you share my thoughts. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, from Barry's point of view, I think the best is Anfield, but from a general point of view, I think it is Tottenham the best in the. I mean, I'm partial to Wembley. I like Wembley a lot, but I think Tottenham is the best on paper. Certainly, the best stadium in the country. And you mentioned then the end of the international series. I mean, what a month has been for the podcast as well. I mean, well, 2 months really, from Dublin to London to Berlin and Madrid. We could have done Rio if it wasn't, Sao Paulo if it wasn't for previous commitments. But it's been an amazing 2 months. And as I said before in the previous video, I mean, it's thanks to all you guys who listen to the show or watch the content online or follow my TikTok. That's why I'm doing it. So yeah, my third year doing it now, and I can't thank you guys enough who are making the time out of your day to listen to this show or follow it or retweet stuff, share stuff, subscribe, all that jazz. You know, it's the reason why I'm doing this stuff is because of you guys who do listen or watch. So thank you very much. And obviously we're hoping, provided the credential gods are in our favour, that we'll be doing the Super Bowl in February. The fight's already booked, so I think I'll be there regardless, whether it's, you know, doing the game or not. We'll be doing the game either way. You know, will there be content coming from that? And just regular content from the channel in the next few months. But in the meantime, this has been the Across the Pod NFL Podcast, our Week 11 review, with, as ever, your host today, Andy Davis, and our guest today in the T20 Blast Podcast, Charlotte Peter. And we'll see you guys next time. Take care.